Mr. Nurse, Reel 3, how did you find the military atmosphere of Aldershot? Was it regimented, more regimented there?
Not particularly, no. In fact, I don't think I ever left the barracks. We were there for quite a short time. I don't think I ever left the barracks. I was not interested in the social life of Aldershot.
Why didn't you like it?
It's a very grim... I was in those, a very grim place, old grey stone Victorian barracks and military everywhere, uniforms everywhere. Oh, only that.
Were you not very enamoured with the sort of military side of it? I mean,
Well, how could I? Having survived, I wouldn't have missed it, but I didn't like the uniformity of the army at all, or the discipline, though I appreciate it now.
But you personally didn't like it much.
No.
Were you still rebelling?
In a way, I think I put a black against my name once when an Indian Army major, a man who'd been a major in India, interviewed us. Yeah. Do you like the Army nurse? And I said, no, sir. And that didn't go down at all. Anyway, that was way back before Fife and Forfar.
That was early, but yeah. But you hadn't changed your mind?
No.
Did you have any particular special friends you'd made?
Oh, yes, several.
Who? Do you remember any of their names?
Don Molyneux, the late Don Molyneux, for a start. Jack.
What was he?
He was a Lance Corporal radio operator with Chris Nichols.
And what was Don? What was it particularly about Don you liked? Tell us a bit about Don.
Well, he was a bit like me. He was tall and thin, and we had good conversations. I can remember several of them. And then there was a corporal.
What sort of thing would you talk about?
Politics sometimes, girls. What else is there to talk about? No, I mean, politics, girls, the war itself, obviously, tanks and our backgrounds.
Did you drink, the pair of you?
Not much then, no.
Social or...?
I don't even remember having beer in the army. I do now, but I didn't then.
And he was just someone you'd buddy around with?
Yeah, quite a number of people we got together.
And other friends, other particular characters or people you remember?
Well, there was a corporal, well, he wasn't a corporal, was Pat O'Brien, who'd been a customs and excise officer in civilian life somewhere in the Merseyside. He was a very well-educated character whose hobby was women. Lovely guy. He had a little black book, and he never went home on leave. He always went round to his various girlfriends in various parts of the country. He was a dyed-in-the-wool communist, by the way. And Dickie Leith didn't like it. Came up to me once. She said, I hope Corporal O'Brien isn't affecting you with his politics, nurse. I said, no, sir. I hardly knew what communism was in those days.
So there's Don Molyneux, Pat O'Brien. Yeah. Anyone else in particular?
Jack, what's his name? He was killed in Operation Goodwood. Jack Keatley.
Keatley?
Yeah, K-E-I-G-H-T-L-E-Y, I think.
And what was Jack like?
He was a nice guy.
Was he a corporal? Or?
No, he was a trooper, another atheist, as was Pat O'Brien, of course.
And another one like this? You all sound much of a muchist.
Yeah, we were.
Quite intellectually, perhaps you wouldn't have thought of it in there, but that seems to be your interest. Mm. Politics, religion, not religion, but you know.
I'm interested in religion. Don't believe in it, but in fact I think it's caused more trouble than any other single thing on this planet. But
And the three or four of you would gather together whenever you could?
Yeah, whenever we could.
But you weren't a drinking group?
No, certainly not.
Any other special... They're all English?
Don was, Jack was, yeah. Pat was an Irishman, obviously, but living in this country.
Is that a sign that you didn't mix quite as much with the Scots, or was it just a coincidence?
Yeah, one or two. Bill Fenwick was, even though he was a sergeant, I got on quite well with him.
Didn't what was he like? Because Bill
big, powerful
Wick.
Fenwick, F-E-N-W-I-C-K. Very laid-back sort of character, very strong physically, and a very brave man too. I mean, he never flinched, I don't think.
And what was he like as a sergeant?
I think he was very good. I was never in his crew. He was one of Lamont's troop sergeants, but I was never in his crew.
You weren't in his troop either?
In his troop.
Oh, you were in his troop. How was he as a troop sergeant? I mean,
good. He was liked by the men. That's not to say he was a pushover, but he was liked by the men.
Any other particular characters?
Well, Bill Warden, who was the troop corporal, I didn't like too much. But
why not?
He was a rather dour character, dour Scot. And
Warden, was it?
Warden, W-A-R-D-E-N. In fact, I think he was quite a nice guy, but I think he was worried about his position. You know, a lot of sergeants and everything. Some officer probably, am I going to get through this all right? You know, or am I doing the right thing? Or what?
So, were you worried about, I mean, were you aware of what was coming, you know, not D-Day itself, but the Northwest Europe campaign, and did you worry about it?
Well, after the first battle at Lo de Bosque, yes, that was tragic, that.
But before that, before you went over?
No, not particularly. I mean, no, everyone was sort of wondering what's going to happen next. Obviously, none of us, or a few of us, obviously Nichols, and there was one or two other. There was a Corporal Gorman who'd seen service in North Africa. He was killed later. He was worried out of his mind. He'd seen it all before, and he didn't want to see it again. It's as simple as that. Whether that ever passed through Chris Nichols' mind, I don't know. But one or two of the guys who were seconded to us from one of the tank regiments, who had seen service in North Africa, were not happy men, let's put it that way. They'd seen it all before.
And did that infect you? I mean, not infect, but did that make you aware that it might not be much fun?
Not particularly, in truth.
And had you any idea, before you went over, about the vulnerability of the Shermans, the fact that they catch fire?
No.
What was your opinion of the Sherman when you... When you before you went over, were you happy with the Sherman as a fighting vehicle?
Before I went over, yes. But after the first battle, no.
So the next thing would be, I think in June, you moved up to Gosport.
That's right.
And anything about that? Did you go before or after D-Day? I'm not quite sure.
It was about a fortnight. I think it was the 25th of June, but don't...
So after?
Yes, after.
Do you remember D-Day at all?
We were in the woods north of Gosport at the time, as far as I remember.
So not 25th of June?
No, I'm talking about the 6th of June. Now, D-Day itself, you meant, did you?
Yes.
Yes, as far as I remember, we were just north of Gosport then, or moving down to Gosport.
And what did you think when you heard... what was your reaction to the news of D-Day?
A combination of fear and excitement, I would guess.
And they were making up LST loads and sorting this out. What do you remember of that?
Well, I remember, I think I drove aboard and said it was an American LST, and got on the... Though I remember it was a grey day, I remember the water was very choppy, though I've never been seasick in my life. And I can never remember the executive officer of this thing, because they were quite big craft, the landing ship tanks. What was it now? He said... all British personnel fall in for chow abaft the smokestack. And I didn't know what the hell he was talking about.
What did he mean?
Well, British personnel fall in at the stern, behind the funnel.
And what was the crossing? I think most of them went across between the 15th and the 17th of June, but that doesn't mean that you did.
No, I don't think. I think it was the 25th of June when we landed there, but I won't swear to that.
That's perfectly possible, yeah. Mm. And what do you remember of the crossing?
It was quite boring. Just before we got to the coast, obviously there was a lot of debris floating around a mile or two off the coast of Normandy, and all the crew were called to action stations, which was normal procedure, and I remember these... They had a 40 millimeter anti-aircraft gun mounted on the bows of this thing, and there was this big black American sergeant with a huge steel helmet behind this thing, you know, traversing it around. It wasn't an aircraft to be seen, but it was all good and fun.
And what about the landing?
That went quite easy with us. We got quite well up onto the beach, and I think we were only about 2 or 3 foot of water there. We didn't even need the waterproofing. I don't think it came over the tracks. Some people weren't so lucky. Some people dove into shell holes. Then I know one crew was drowned.
And what happened then? You landed about the 25th.
We were shifted off the beach as soon as possible by the beach master, and I think we all leaguered up on a dirt track. It wasn't Arromanche, Corstool. Does that strike a chord with you?
East of
Arromanche. We were about there, and the first thing next morning at about dawn, two Me-109s flew over at about treetop height. Didn't fire a shot, but it was quite an awakening. I think they were the only two M109s left at Caprique, I think it was the airfield there, wasn't it? Carpi, or Caprique.
So what was the next thing that happened?
Well, then we went to a little village, I should think a couple of miles away from...
That'd be Cully.
Cully, that's right. And we had our first casualty.
How was that caused?
And that was caused by a local man, a guy called, he's a Bristol man, it was a Cornish-sounding name, I've forgotten it now. And he'd been one of these guys who'd been in the training regiment for about three sessions because he didn't want to fight, and I don't blame him. And apparently, I don't know whether he did it perfectly, he dropped his Sten gun. This is before we saw any action. And there was a very weak spring on the Sten gun, and he dropped it butt first, and it boom, 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 emptied its magazine across his tummy, and he was killed instantly.
Now, you moved into Cully,
mm-hmm.
and is this, did you join the others there, or were you the first there?
I think the whole regiment was there.
And were you joining them later? Because they'd been
and the 3rd Royal Tanks were quite close.
Most of them had been there since the 15th.
Mm, yeah.
Would that be possible?
No, I think the whole division, I'm not sure, I won't swear to this, but I think the whole brigade moved over on the 25th. That is to say, the 23rd Hussars.
Now, what was the situation? We're not quite sure about the time you arrived there, because the first action was definitely the 26th, I think, at Sher, but sometime before that you'd got to Cully. What was the setup in the you and the other tank regiment? How were you laid out?
Well, I remember a huge field, I mean a really big field, and the tanks were just around the perimeter of this field. And the 3rd Royal Tanks were across a road in a similar field. And I made the mistake there of accidentally firing the smoke bomb. And it landed in the adjutant's, 3rd Royal Tanks adjutant's tent. I thought, oh, called court-martial, so I rushed across and apologised, and he was ever such a nice character, captain. Oh, he said, forget it.
How had you fired it? Was this one of the ones...
electrically fired. There were things like that, about six of them grouped together, you see, each with a smoke bomb, rather longer than that.
And the turret ring?
Yeah.
And how had you act? You just...
I accidentally pressed the button that fired it. And, of course, we were still within range of German guns, you see, and... there were sort of signs, dust means death. There was this huge pall of smoke rising over the adjutant's tent. So he wasn't best pleased. He was very nice about it.
And were you dug in at all?
No.
And where did you
sleep? Not then.
You
slung a tarpaulin over the track down to the ground. Slept under that. It's a big tarpaulin. Just fastened to the tracks and then coming down at a 45-degree angle.
But not dug in below beneath that.
No.
What did you carry on your tanks at that stage? I know you started to carry more and more on the backs of the tanks, but what would you carry then, sort of equipment on the tank? You've obviously got this tarpaulin. Any other special equipment you carry, like shovels or anything like that?
Oh, yes, there were always shovels and equipment when, for instance, the tracks broke fairly frequently, either accidentally or by enemy action, so you had the equipment to join them up. Used to wind the driver used to very slowly wind the sprocket back until we could connect the two ends and then slip the necessary pin between them. I don't think we carried spare petrol. We'd have been very foolish to do so. Usually the rations could be slung over the back. And in there was a metal case about this long attached to the back of the turret where our great coats and various odds and sods personal things went in.
What about weapons?
All pistols, there was Thompson submachine gun in our case, grenades, box of six grenades.
Was that in the tank?
In the turret, yeah.
And while we're at Cully, we might as well look at some of the things. What about the compo rations? I believe that was the first time you did, well, it may not have been, but compo rations certainly were about the same. Could you describe what compo rations were and what you thought of
them?
Well,
as far as I was aware, they were obviously like tinned vegetables or Scotch broth and stuff of that sort. There was usually bacon, there was hard biscuits, there was margarine, there were toilet rolls, there were packs of cigarettes, I think there were tins of 40, woodbines, things of that sort, jam, sausage, I think tinned sausages were included too. It wasn't bad.
And did you get food, was that how you got your food, or would you get food from the kitchens as well?
No, the kitchens was... Even sometimes when we were in action, the cooks would come up with really hot tureens of really hot soup and things of that sort.
And what was the food like that the cooks prepared?
Not bad. Not bad at all. The soups they produced, I thought, were very, very good. I don't think they could do much else but soup, but...
What about latrines? I mean, that'd be not the first time, but... They'd have to make latrine provision. What was the latrine provision?
Well, it's just a trench dug in a field or in a wood, wherever you are, and perhaps a couple of things of that sort at each end, and a log. Cross poles, yeah.
Was latrine discipline enforced?
Yes. Now, the only, of course, in war, I'll tell you about that later on if you're interested, but in action, all you did was an empty. You certainly couldn't excrete in a turret of a tank, but you could urinate, obviously. So we used empty shell cases. We always kept a couple of empty.
We will
shell
come
cases.
To that, yeah, yeah, as we go through. But as a place like Cully, you just you'd have a formal latrine that you were expected to use.
That's right, with a couple of tarpaulins around it for privacy.
Was there anyone in Cully? Were the French still about in Cully?
Yeah, Cully wasn't badly damaged at all.
How did you get on?
It was only a hamlet anyway.
Did you visit it? And did you get on well with the?
No, we had nothing to do with. Not intentionally, we had nothing to do with the civilian population of the village.
Now there were some British and German knocked out tanks in the area, which some of the men visited and had a look at. Did you do that? And if so, what did you think?
No, I didn't know of them, quite frankly. I know there were some knocked out Shermans in the area of the beach, but I hadn't seen a German tank when we were in Cully.
And what about, you mentioned the two planes. Was there any German air activity or shell fire coming your way at Cully?
No, we could hear it, but there's none coming our way. I don't think the Germans knew we were there. I'm sure they didn't.
Now, we don't know how long you were there, but it was in June 1944, so that'll do for a thing. But what about the first action was Operation Epsom, which, according to the book, took place on the 26th of June 1944. Now, this was your first time in action, and it was the advance on Schur. C and A squadron certainly went on, and C squadron lost 7 tanks that day. According to this, this is not necessarily what happened. This is just what it's in the official history. In the history, what do you remember of that day? Firstly, starting, if any, with any briefing you got of what was going on.
We were just told that we were going into action, and the two troop was then commanded by a young. He'd been the chief instructor, I've forgotten his name now, he'd been the chief instructor in the rank of captain in the 61st Training Regiment of Scott. And he dropped rank because he wanted to get at the Hun. He was a very nice guy. And we went, I think it was called Lode de Bosque, something of that sort of little area or hamlet.
And what exactly were you doing? I mean, you know, it was basically you were moving forward on the Odon and onto the Orme, and you were going on to Schur. What exactly happened as far as you're concerned? You were on the gun, were you?
Yeah. 11th Armoured Division were the breakout division. Braver men than ours had created the bridgehead, but our job was to break out of it, and that was the first move towards breaking out of this comparatively small bridgehead.
And who was your tank commander at the time?
It was Corporal Tibbet.
Still Tibbet?
Yeah.
And what basically happened, as far as you remember, as much detail as you can remember?
Right, well, I can remember that very distinctly. We got into a sparsely wooded area, and it was dusk. And suddenly all hell broke loose. This captain, lieutenant's tank was blazing. Another tank was blazing. And Tibbet was even more frightened than I was. He was absolutely rigid with fury. He didn't say, we would stop there all night. We didn't have any sleep, obviously. We had to stay in the bloody tank because there were all sorts of things whizzing around. And he was absolutely rigid with fear. And we wondered, we were illuminated by at least 2, if not 3, blazing tanks, in which several of my friends were killed, Tommy Morgan, for example, and Les Crowley. And we wondered what the hell, the next morning, we wondered what the hell had happened. Why had we survived? And we got out of the tank, because obviously the German vehicles had withdrawn. And I told you about this sort of metal casing on the back of the turret. Well, in straight line, it was about 18 inches from my head, I suppose, and there was a 75mm hole right through it, gone in one side and come out the other through all the greatcoats and things. And I think the German gunner had seen the flash when his shell hit and presumed that he knocked us out, and we survived. Simple as that. 18 inches, certainly not more than 24 inches from my head.
Now, that's in the evening. Do you remember what had happened during the day? You know, because they started in the day.
Well, we advanced. I would imagine we advanced several kilometres. But the fighting didn't start until the dusk.
Nothing particularly happened during the day, as far as you were concerned. And how did you feel? You know, Tippett had been scared out of his wits. You'd been scared, slightly less so, but scared. How did you feel? You know, when you saw after your first experience,
quite shocked, very shocked. Because I know that at least 2 of my friends had been burned to death. They didn't get out, because when the case of Daddy Crowley, the driver, the gun was traversed over his escape hatch, so he couldn't get out. Tommy Moore.
Could he not get through the one below?
There was one below, I agree, but...
That was blocked.
I think he was probably dead by then anyway. And the commander, the lieutenant, got out with, I believe he lost a leg in it. Bill, I forgot his name now, Billsland, something of that sort.
And any other friends you heard about?
No, Tommy and Les Crowley were the closest I was to. I didn't mention them just now, did I? But they were the closest friends I had. Tommy was a Scotsman, and Tommy Morgan doesn't sound very Scottish, does it? And Ed Crowley was a Londoner.
And what about the inflammability of the Sherman? Had that become...
Well, the Germans described them as Tommy cookers. We had these little Tommy cookers. I don't know whether you've ever heard of them before. And they described them as either Ronson lighters or Tommy cookers. They knew that they were thin-skinned and they only had to hit the petrol tanks, and that was it. Because, petrol is more volatile than diesel, isn't it? I'm sure it is. And they went up like... Well,
and how did you feel when you realised, you now realise
yeah,
this,
yes,
you not,
it
not just
quickly.
The Germans, you knew as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, well, we weren't happy, obviously, but then what could we do about it? Nothing.
So what happened next day? Because the battle went on for about a couple of days.
Yeah.
So you'd advanced in the first day, second night you'd been sort of stuck in a wooded area
yeah.
Near the Lorch de Bosque, yeah. Is what you know. What happened next?
Well, I think they were so worried that they withdrew the squadron. I remember a field of stubble, and we were allowed to rest to have a night's sleep because no one had slept the night before, which was rather unusual, rather thoughtful of the army. But that's all I remember from then on. Then, oh yes, go on. There's another little incident in the area of Sher. The next day we went somewhere in the Sher area, and Tibbet was ordered to take his tank down into a little valley. The squadron were on top of this ridge, and he was ordered to take his tank on its own, with me, of course, down into a little valley. And I had more bottle in those days. I thought, that dugout over there. So pulling my trusty Smith & Wesson, I got out of the tank and wandered over. And it was a dugout, and it hadn't been left for more than a few minutes, believe you me. So I thought, I'll explore a bit more. And I went up a following ahead. You never walk across open fields when you're in the army. And suddenly there was a German weapon called a Nebelwerfer, which was a rocket. I think it was an 8-barrel rocket launcher. And I heard this, moaning minutes we called them, as you may have heard. And I heard these thundering things, 6 or 8 of them coming. And I actually saw them in the air. And they were aimed particularly at our tank. I actually saw a sort of grey smudge against the sky. And I threw myself down. It was one of the few occasions where I wore a steel helmet. I threw myself down on the ground, which was very marshy. And all 6 or 8 of them landed about 20 yards in front of the tank, in marshy ground. And all the blast went forward, and all I got was little splinters about smaller than my little fingernail against my steel helmet. So that was another lucky one. Well, Tibbet was still, didn't know what to do. We couldn't move the tank because it was stuck in the mud. We couldn't go forward, we couldn't go backwards, we couldn't even move sideways. We'd better report to the Major Nichols. So I took the firing pin out of the cannon and the machine gun, and we marched up to Nichols' tank. What are you doing here? This was to Tibbet. Oh, we're stuck, sir, we can't move. Get back to your vehicle immediately and take your crew with you. I'll send an armoured, what was it called, an ARV, an armoured recovery vehicle, to pull you out, which he did. And from then on, I don't remember much of that particular action.
And that's the night where you had the rest in
yeah.
the stubble field?
Yes, the night before, yeah. Or the night before. I think it was about, well, because we did have a night's rest, I remember that. So it must have been 2 days afterwards.
Now, the next big thing that seems to be is there's this business of moving on to point 112.
Hill 112, oh God, yes.
That would be around about 30th, so
yeah.
That's about 4
yeah.
days after you started. Mm. So what do you remember of that?
I didn't like it. Well, there's one or two things I can remember. Bear with me. On one occasion, Lamont, I think, I don't know what had happened to Tibbet, but I was then Lamont's gunner. I'd been promoted, I think, because he knew I was a good gunner.
Had Tibbet gone home, or...?
I don't know what had happened to him. I wouldn't be at all surprised if he hadn't had a nervous breakdown. He was certainly no good as a tank commander. He was a nice enough character, don't misunderstand me, but he lost his nerve completely, I think. But don't put that into... well, it doesn't matter, I suppose he's dead now anyway.
And so you went to Le Mans crew, and who else was in that crew with you?
I remember Taffy Millard as the loader and radio operator. There was Le Mans, myself, and Taffy in the turret. I forget who the drivers were. I think it might be a guy called Ted Gualter, Gwalter. But I don't remember who the co-driver was. Anyway, we got on to this.
Were you a happy crew?
Yes.
And did you meld straight, you know, get on well straight away?
I think so, yeah.
So you're straight into action with him in a sense, because it's point 112. So what exactly happened with it? Or Hill 112?
One of the things I remember is we'd... I think we were overlooking Carpeaky, isn't it? The aerodrome. It doesn't matter anyway.
Yes.
We were on a forward slope overlooking a valley. And I remember there was a big wood across the other side of the valley. And suddenly four... I think they might have been Tigers from the 501st Heavy Tank Battalion of the Germans, started crossing my bows from right to left. So Lamont directed me onto the leading one with the 75mm, and I fired. I watched the trace, and it hit the bloody thing and went boom up into the air. I'm not talking about the shell, not the tank. Boom up in the air, and we saw these four barrels coming round, driver in reverse, and we were back over the... They fired at us, but they all four missed. We were back on the other side of the hill before you could say knife.
Was this the first time you'd opened fire?
No, I hadn't opened fire. I had no target, you see. Tibbet was so stiff with fear, even if he could see one, he couldn't direct me onto it. And had I done so, I'd have probably been killed, because that German gunner reckoned he'd hit us.
So you fired at these tanks, it bounced off.
Yeah.
Where did you hit them? Whereabouts?
I would suggest it was the turret.
And this was which type of tank?
I think, it's very easy to distinguish a Tiger from a Mark IV, but I think it was a Tiger. Because I remember reading...
Not a Panther?
No, it wasn't a Panther, quite definitely.
And but it just bounced off whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then you've gone back over the hill. What happened next?
Well, we were virtually holding them. I don't know whether the infantry or some other regiment was involved, but we were virtually in a holding position then. I remember we were lined up against a hedge watching what was happening in front of us, which was very little as far as I was concerned, but... The soft vehicles, the B. So the B echelon had sent vehicles up with fresh ammunition and fuel and probably food. And it would appear that a German OP sighted them from somewhere or another, because they were direct hits. First shots, both ammunition and petrol went up, with no hope at all for the crew. I wonder if you...
Yeah.